this is a perfect day to be outside. I thank you for coming and hearing about the Ice Age. Yeah. Now, hopefully you have some sweaters, because I hear that when I talk about this, a chill goes through the audience. People tend to feel cold. Anyway, my topic is an Ice Age, only the Bible can explain it. Only the Bible can explain it? What kind of title is that? Well, how does that work? Well, just wait, I will tell you how it relates. Okay. Now, I've been earth science researcher. I've been doing this for 40 years, and I read the latest technical journals, in secular technical journals in geology, geophysics, and glaciology, and I read lots of challenges. We have hundreds of earth science challenges, and the Lord has led me to try to answer these challenges. So I'm trying to explain things within the biblical worldview. And some of the challenges I listed about 10 minutes off the top of my head. Here's a few right here. I've worked on some of these. I'm not going to read these verbatim, but I'm just going to mention a little bit about them. Like, how does the flood cover Mount Everest? How many have heard of that challenge? You know, it's got a real easy answer. Mount Everest and the mountains come up out of the floodwaters. You know, you don't have to bring the ocean up to cover those things. They come up. Because Psalm 104:8 says, when the waters drain, the mountains rose, the valleys sank down. When that happens, the water drains off. It's right in the Bible, Psalm 104:6-9. Here's a few more. But one of these challenges is the Ice Age. And this is what I've been working on for 40 years. So you're seeing a quickie summary of 40 years of research. First of all, what is an ice age? By the way, this area was glaciated, as I'm sure all of you know. About probably had 3,000 feet of ice right above our heads not that long ago. So what is an ice age? An ice age is essentially a great increase in snow and ice. Right now, 10% of the land is covered by snow and ice, mainly Antarctica and Greenland. During the ice age, 30% was covered, and it's mainly in the higher and mid-latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere and Antarctica. And of course, a lot of mountainous areas around the world were glaciated too. But it's just a 30% increase, by three times what we have today. Also, I want to make a point that it's the last major event in Earth history. I'm going to come back and revisit that at the end with some concluding remarks. The last major event in Earth history. Now, the secular scientists actually have five ice age periods. And here's they are in their jargon and their ages. The Pleistocene, by the way, if I use a term or quote something that says Pleistocene or Quaternary, that means the ice age period in the secular jargon. I'll have some quotes that'll use those in quotes. Anyway, the Pleistocene, the last major ice age period, I believe is a real ice age, as I will show coming up here. But then they have four others that we might call ancient ice ages, and they're hundreds of millions of years ago, and they're based on hard rocks, what they see in hard rocks, what looks like glacial debris in hard rocks. So they postulate all these major ice ages. Now, some of these are really strange, like the late Precambrian one was off and on 600 to 900 million years ago, according to them. And it was at least once the whole Earth was glaciated. That's what they say. Well, I know from the study of atmospheric science that if you glaciate the whole Earth, the white surface is going to reflect most of the sunlight back to space, cooling the whole Earth 100 degrees centigrade. We'd never get out of it. So it's really ingenious. It's really interesting to see their ingenious ideas on how to get out of this. You know, they painted themselves in a corner with a global ice age. So anyway, some of them are really strange. Anyway, I believe there's another explanation for those. They're in the rocks. I believe they can be explained by gigantic landslides. The Pleistocene ice ages are real. The others are explained by gigantic submarine landslides during the flood, of course. Now, here's the challenge of the Ice Age. This is how they challenge us. In fact, they think we can't explain anything with our worldview. So they have lots of challenges. But you know something? We have actually have lots of answers, if they would read them. For instance, the challenges, each ice age, they say, takes 100,000 years. The glacial phase is 90,000. The interglacial phase is 10,000. And there's been about 30 regular repeating ice ages during the last 2.5 million years. Actually, if you read some reports, it's 50. We've had 50 in the last 2.5 million years. But in that case, they don't cycle every 100,000 years. You go back more than a million years, they cycle every 40,000 years in regular succession. That's what they claim. That's what they say. And, of course, here's a quote from an anti-creationist who actually did his homework. He actually read a lot of her books. And he got a lot of things right. Unlike a lot of skeptics, I've read a lot of skeptics, both within the church and out of the church, and most of the time they get our position wrong. They don't read the material, or they don't read it very well, and they get it wrong. Anyway, he did a pretty good job, even though he's an atheist. He says, increasing the duration of the ice age by a factor of about 10 greatly increases the stress upon the creation scientists who must compress the events of 15 million years into 4,000 years of post-flood time. He got it right that it's in the post-flood period. And increasing their ice age by 10 times, that what they did is they decided that Antarctica was 10 times as old as they previously thought. They're always shuffling these dates around all the time. But it increased in age by 10 times. And it reached equilibrium 15 million years ago. It started about 30 million. Anyway, see, that's the latest thinking on the Antarctic ice age. But they says that puts more stress on us. We have to explain all this ice and snow from the ice age and the current ice sheets, Greenland and Antarctic ice sheet, in post-flood time, only 4,000 years. Yes, we have a young Earth, a young Earth timescale. But I found that that's the secret of explaining the ice age, as I will get into. So what do you do with challenges? Well, this is what I do. This is my theme verse for research. Examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. I'm going to hold fast to the Bible as God's Word and to Jesus as my Lord and Savior. But from then on, I'm examining everything. Everything the culture says. There is so much misinformation in this culture. So you got to examine things. And just not superficially. If you do so superficially, you might know just enough to get in trouble. You got to do it carefully. Not only this issue, but many, many others. It takes time. It takes time. But, you know, you can do it. Okay. I'm going to present this topic by a series of questions. But the first thing I got to answer, was there really an ice age? I mean, am I trying to explain something that never existed? Well, how would we test this or find this out? Well, we'd go to currently glaciated areas, and see what they leave behind. Does anyone recognize it? Oh, I gave the title. This is the Athabasca Glacier near beautiful Canadian Rockies. And practically all the glaciers in the world have been receding. And the Athabasca Glacier was up here in 1890. It's been receding about a mile back there due to global warming. Oh, global warming. I believe global warming is real. But they claim it's only been 1 degree Fahrenheit since 1880. But there's reasons that in the global temperature records, there's warm biases, so you can knock off a third of that. But regardless, we know from relationships in the 20th century between the temperature curve, the CO2 curve, and the sunspot cycle, that the temperature is more correlated to effects on the sun and less to carbon dioxide. So I believe that most of this global warming is from natural causes on the sun. So our amount that we're raising by adding carbon dioxide to the air, which is a very minor greenhouse gas, it's only 2% of the greenhouse effect. Water vapor is 95%. So adding all the CO2 is probably only warm the Earth 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit, 0.2 degrees centigrade. If I say Fahrenheit, would you under you would know that still? Okay. Anyway, what do you see when these glaciers recede? Well, you see a bunch of rocks of all sizes piled up in mounds, rocks with sand around them and granules that are what's called a finer grain matrix around the rock. And you see, right in there, you see ridges in front of the ice and along the sides over here. I will show you better pictures of that. Those are terminal and lateral moraines. Here's the lateral moraine. Now, moraines are formed as a glacier moves out, stops, melts back, and it leaves a ridge of debris around it, horseshoe shaped. Along the sides, it's called the lateral moraine. In the front, it's called a terminal or end moraine. So here's the lateral moraine on the north side of the Columbia ice fields. Right here, notice how sharp it is. And you see that it's made of rocks of all sizes. You can't see a lot of the rocks, but they're of all sizes, with sand in between. And when glaciers move, they pick up all kinds of rocks and debris. And that... As it, and the base, and as the base moves, it scratches the bedrock, and the rocks in the base get scratched. And because the rocks are in ice at the base, they can shift, and you can get scratches in different directions because the rocks shift. Like this rock right here, this boulder. You see scratches going this way, and scratches going this way, and see, is there any other sets? There might be a second, a third set on there, but anyway... That boulder turned at the base of the ice. And as it moves, it scratches the bedrock. So these are the features we see around currently glaciated areas today. So let's go take a little quick little look around the Earth where they claimed that the ice occurred not too long ago and see if we see similar features. Now this is a mound of debris on the Great Plains, west of Great Falls, Montana, where I used to live, forecasting the weather. And it's about 10 miles east of the Rocky Mountain front. Here's the Rocky Mountain front. And here's what looks like a terminal moraine right here. It continued like this. It was broken through right in here. That's where they put a reservoir. Probably because there was a lake dammed up in here that broke through and eroded the moraine. But anyway, that looks like a terminal rain. It naturally wouldn't be there from the flood. And when you look at the moraine, you see that it has rocks of all sizes mixed in with finer grain matrix, exactly what you see in currently glaciated areas. Also, some of the rocks are scratched in different directions, just like you see in currently glaciated areas. And also, when you climb up on the Rocky Mountain front, you see the bedrock scratched, like right here. And here's an 800-foot cliff right there. So the ice moved from west to east down the cliff and about 10 miles out into the Great Plains. And notice how fresh these are. I mean, this is the Rocky Mountains. They get a lot of snow and rain, and they're not erased yet, meaning that the ice age was not that long ago. This isn't a location that gets up in the 80 degrees, the 80s, every summer. So how would ice form there today? You know, what kind of climate change would we need for ice there today? You'd have to cool it off to at least 32 degrees Fahrenheit, average for the summertime. Actually, it's a lot more than that, as I will get into. But anyway, when you add, let's look at some more glacial features. This is a horseshoe-shaped moraine around the Wallawa Mountains in northeast Oregon. And there's an over-deepened lake, like a land fjord, similar to your fjords on the western British Columbia coast. Valley glaciers tend to over-deepen valleys, and so they trap a deep lake in there. And here's the lateral moraine. Here's the other lateral moraine. Here's a small end moraine, about 100 feet tall. When you go down to the level of the lake and you look at the trees for scale, you realize this moraine is 600 feet tall. which means you've had about 2,000 feet of ice in that valley that moved out onto the plains at Enterprise, Oregon. In a place that gets in the low 90s for high temperatures in the summertime. A place that is, the ice is so foreign in that area. So, how do you get an ice? The Bolao Mountains covered with ice. See? And of course, when you look at the lateral moraine, it's similar to what you see in other presently glaciated areas. So the upshot of this, these mountains are glaciated, like a lot of other mountains in the western United States. All your mountains were glaciated, but as you get south of British Columbia, there's only certain mountain areas were glaciated, not in between. Your ice was even in the low areas in British Columbia. And of course, we have these erratic boulders. Erratic boulders are rocks that don't outcrop in the nearby neighbor, transported long distances. This is the Okotoka erratics, southwest of Calgary, Alberta. Actually, they start just east of Jasper, and they go down in a line southwest of Calgary, clear to almost Cut Bank, Montana. It's a really unique terrain. It's an erratic terrain where it came from the Rocky Mountains. Now, this didn't roll by water because the edges are so sharp. See how sharp it is? Water would have smoothed those edges out, broke it up. This had to be transported in an iceberg to get there. Another erratic boulder is this, found southwest of Portland, Oregon. This is 150 miles south of where the ice sheet, the boundary of the ice sheet, which is Olympia, Washington. It's a shale. It's been heated up and hardened a bit, and so it's a metamorphic rock as a result, and it's called argillite. Now, no argillite outcrops in the whole state of Oregon, so what's it doing? Very angular looking and sharp. It couldn't have rolled more than a half a mile before it would have broke up. So how did it get here down in Portland, Oregon as an erratic boulder from the Ice Age? Well, it's because it was the Missoula Flood, Lake Missoula Flood. You had a 2,000-foot deep lake along the edges of the ice sheet in northwest Montana, filling up the valleys of western Montana. 540 cubic miles of water, about five times the volume of Lake Erie. And then it was trapped by a finger of the ice that came down through northern Idaho from British Columbia. But, you know, ice being a dam, it isn't going to hold a 2,000-foot deep lake very long, So with time, it just broke through there and emptied in 2 days, carved up eastern Washington in that time, formed Grand Coulee, and eroded 550 cubic miles of basalt and silt, all in a matter of days, and came through Spokane, Washington, 600 feet deep, 1,000 feet deep through the Columbia Gorge, and 400 feet deep as it spread out around Portland, Vancouver area of... Vancouver, Washington, that is, in Portland, Oregon. That's the Lake Missoula Flood. If there's a Lake Missoula Flood, there was an ice age. So there was an ice age, and here's the general location of where it was. It covered practically all Canada. Believe it or not, there is a few spots in Canada that were not glaciated. One of them is in south central Saskatchewan, right up there. Right up there, the boundary was south, but it wasn't glaciated. Which means it was very thin in here. Also, your Yukon Territory was not glaciated. The lowlands, that is. Or the northwest part. And the lowlands of Alaska weren't glaciated, just the mountains. And that's where you find those woolly mammoths and bisons and horses and the permafrost. Woolly mammoths by the millions, I might add, in Alaska and Siberia. And, of course, it covered the northern United States, and a lot of mountainous areas were glaciated. This is a schematic. A lot more mountain areas were glaciated than I show right here. And then when you look at Europe and Asia, this is the approximate boundary of the ice sheet. Now I say approximate because there's controversy over some of these boundaries. Scandinavia, most of England was glaciated, northern Germany, the Alps, northwest Siberia. There's a little controversy here. And they think that the shallow Barents Sea north of Norway was glaciated. I think they're correct on that. Because the features you see on the bottom of the ocean, these glacial features. And in Asia or Siberia, only the mountains are glaciated, not the lowlands. And that's where you find the woolly mammoth fossils, not in ice, they're found in permafrost, perfectly frozen soil in the lowlands that were never glaciated, which is a major mystery of secular sciences. Why weren't the lowlands of Siberia and Alaska glaciated during the Ice Age? They were never glaciated. And that's where you find those woolly mammoth fossils by the millions. So there was an Ice Age. And we need to explain it. It's a real event. But can mainstream scientists explain it? Well, if you go to a class at a university in glaciology or even geology, you know, or sometimes they make it seem like it's easy to get some glaciation. Cool off the temperature 6 degrees centigrade, presto, you start the Ice Age in northern Canada, and it moves to south at a glacial pace for tens of thousands of years, etc., etc. They make it sound pretty easy. But when you get into it, it's not easy at all. And specialists will admit this. But in order to know how easy or how tough it is to glaciate, we need to look at the requirements of an ice. What do we need for ice to start building here in Vancouver or Surrey? What do we need? Well, first of all, cooler summers, that's for sure. I mean, summers are way too warm. It'd melt any kind of winter or spring snow in this area really easy. And in most areas that were covered by ice, the summers are just way too warm, too much sunshine. So you need cooler summers, much cooler summers, at least 32 degrees. But the cooler the air, the drier it is. It holds less water vapor. So you need much more snowfall for an ice age. Where's that going to come from if you have cooler temperatures? So there's lots of problems. And not only that, if you could find a climate change somehow, it's got to persist for many years. Now, the secular scientists have a principle they use to explain all the past, the rocks, the fossils, and their deductions of the climate. That's called uniformitarianism. How many have heard that term? About half of you. What it means is that we use uniform present processes we see going on today, slow processes, and we extrapolate them in the past millions of years. That's uniformitarianism. Just think of uniform processes we see today explain all the rocks and all the fossils and the climate. Okay, if that's the case, how do we explain the radical climate change of the Ice Age that wasn't that long ago by present processes of climate change? Well, they have lots of problems. In fact, there's over 60 theories on the origin of the Ice Age. There's only one aspect of secular science that has more theories than that, and that is on the demise of the dinosaurs, the extinction of the dinosaurs. There's over 100 theories on the extinction of the dinosaurs. You know, when they have that so many theories over the years, all have serious problems, that might give you a hint that maybe they're having a little trouble explaining these features. So how much cooling are we talking about? Let's say we're talking about Vancouver here, but I use this for Minneapolis. It'd be fairly similar for Vancouver. The June to August average temperature for Minneapolis is 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Minneapolis is on the edge of the ice sheet. It's pretty thin, I think only maybe 500 feet thick there. Ice age features in the northern United States, Midwest, are pretty pathetic. They're not, they're not that good. So it was a very thin ice. So 70 degrees. Well, you're going to have to cool off that to at least 32 degrees Fahrenheit. But because solar radiation is the main mechanism of melting snow and ice, and you get a lot of it in the summertime at those latitudes, you need to go well below 32 degrees Fahrenheit for an average to keep the snow and ice from that one winter through the summer to the next winter so you can start building up for an ice age. Well, how much cooler? Well, I got a paper in Quaternary Research, the journal Quaternary Research, where it discovered the net melting in the lowlands of Antarctica in the springtime. What temperature do you have to warm up to get net melting in the sea level areas around the Antarctic ice sheet? It was 14 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's probably similar for what Minneapolis needs. But I'm going to be conservative. Let's say 20 degrees Fahrenheit. If the average summer temperature, and I'm including the spring and the fall also in this, is an average of 20 degrees Fahrenheit, then you might get 1 inch of snow that remains through the summer for the next winter. 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, that's a drop of 50 degrees Fahrenheit. 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Where are they going to get a climate change like that? And then add all that moisture because cooler air is drier. See, they got major problems. So when they have one finger pointed at us, there's three fingers pointed at them. And I can give you a lot of quotes. Here's one from J.K. Charlesworth in the book Quaternary Era. It was a 1,600-page, two-volume book on the Ice Age. Great book. Anyway, he says, Pleistocene phenomena produced some great theories. No, an absolute riot of theories, ranging from the remotely possible to the mutually contradictory and the palpably inadequate. That's not saying much for those theories. In fact, that includes the one they believe today called astronomical theory of the Ice Ages. That one includes that theory too, because it's an old theory. But they, you know, that was in 1957 that book was published. And we know so much more now, don't we? This is modern times. Well, let's go up to more modern times and see what they have to say. Here's a 1997 issue of U.S. News and World Report. The whole magazine was dedicated to the top 18 mysteries of science. Now, some of these mysteries are mysteries of their own making because they believe in evolution. Oops, wrong way. For instance, why should males exist? What? Why is that a major mystery? Well, because in evolution, you evolve the first cell, supposedly from chemicals, and you only have one sex, supposedly, somehow. I don't know how it works. They don't know either. It's just all stories. And then it has to reproduce asexually. They can't figure out why there's a male and a female. It's a major mystery. There's books, articles written every year about this major mystery. But this is an example where the biblical worldview has hands down on the secular worldview, and that it simply says in the Bible, God made them male and female. So that's where we have it over on them, where we can explain it, and so it's no major mystery to us. But some of these mysteries that they explain are actually legitimate mysteries. For instance, what causes ice ages? That made the top 18 mysteries. So it's not easy to have an ice age. It's a major problem. And I gather a few more quotes here. David Ault, in his book, The Lake Missoula, well, I can't read that from here, Glacier Lake Missoula, it's humongous floods, I can read it. Although theories abound, no one really knows what causes ice ages. That was 2001. Okay, it's a major mystery. They can't explain it. Can we explain it? You know, that's the big question. Can we explain it? And do we have enough time for an ice age to occur? Well, first of all, we have to figure out where do we place it in our worldview. Is it before the flood, in the flood, after the flood? That's the first thing you have to do. Well, as I showed you on like some of those moraines and those erratics, they're on the surface of flood rocks, hardened flood rocks. And moraines, like horseshoe-shaped moraines, they're not going to form in the flood. And those scratches are fairly rare in the flood. They can form in the flood by landslides, but otherwise they're rare. But if they're on the surface, that implies something that's post-flood. So all we know is it's post-flood. It's right after the flood. We had a pre-flood warm climate, which can be verified from all the warm climate vegetation we find as fossils. Then we had a flood that buried it all. And then we had a transitional climate to the present climate. That's where we would place the ice age, right? In that transitional climate, which presents the idea that maybe the flood perturbed the climate for an ice age afterwards. Oh, let's explore that idea. What specifically about the flood would cause a climate change afterwards? Well, the flood was a gigantic volcanic event. Lots of things happened. Meteorite impacts, volcanism, flooding the whole earth. So after the flood, we have all this volcanic dust and aerosols trapped in the stratosphere after the flood. And the significance of these is that they reflect some of the sunlight back to space, causing a cooling on the land. And it's effective mainly in the summertime over mid and high latitude continental areas. So volcanic dust and aerosols left over from the flood can cause your initial cooling. Also, where do we get the moisture? Well, the fountain of the Great Deep is probably water that was trapped in the subsurface or below the ground that came up, like Yellowstone Park. And when it comes up and is added to the pre-flood oceans, after the flood, the oceans are going to be warm, much warmer than today, and no sea ice. And so the warmer, and the significance of that, the warmer the water, the more the evaporation. And it's going to be especially effective at mid- and high-latitude oceans. Like the Gulf of Alaska has sea surface temperature, what, low 50s? Well, that's fairly cool, so it has, its evaporation is limited. But what if it was about 85 degrees Fahrenheit? You're going to have three or four times the amount of evaporation from the Gulf of Alaska. So if you had temperatures in the 80s as ocean temperatures right after the flood, you're going to have massive evaporation. The effect's going to be the strongest at mid and high latitudes, to be collected into storms and rapidly dumped in the land for a rapid ice age. So you have the moisture and you have the cooling. And the mechanism will persist but wane with time. It'll persist and wane with time because it's connected to the cooling of the ocean. As you cool the oceans, you have less and less evaporation. And finally you come to a point where the oceans are too cool to keep up with the melting, summer melting. And then you reach a maximum for the ice, and then it starts melting from then on. So it's the cooling time of the oceans that times the ice age, as I will get into here briefly. Here's a little schematic on the reflection of the sunlight back to space from dust and aerosols. Aerosols are very fine particles, a micron in diameter around that range. A micron is a millionth of a meter. But the aerosols, the dust falls out within a matter of weeks to months, but aerosols sink out in about, 1 to 3 years. And sometimes if you have a lot of volcanism, it'll linger to about maybe 12 years. So there needs to be a mechanism to replenish the aerosols in the stratosphere. And indeed there is, because there's a lot of volcanoes that went off during the Ice Age. The major volcanoes you see in the Cascade Range, like Mount Rainier, Mount Baker, those are probably most of them post-flood volcanoes. So there's thousands of them across the Earth. So you have a lot of volcanism during the Ice Age. As J.K. Charlesworth said, signs of Pleistocene, that is Ice Age volcanicity and Earth movement, are visible in all parts of the world. We had massive volcanism during the Ice Age too, and the net effect would be to replenish the aerosols in the stratosphere to continue reflecting sunlight back to space, cooling the land in the summertime. So this is kind of a little schematic on how it works. You have warm oceans, powerful evaporation, volcanic dust in the upper atmosphere reflecting sunlight back to space, causing snow and sleet and pile up of the cold land. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, a little schematic on how it works. So, we can explain it. We have a powerful mechanism of climate change after the flood. Then the next question, how rapid was the Ice Age? Do we need 100,000 years for our Ice Age? Well, this is my evidence that it was a very rapid Ice Age. This is it, Jenkins. Indisputable proof that the Ice Age caught these people completely off guard. There's my evidence right there, from the far side. Now, seriously, the way I did is I estimated the cooling of the ocean. And so I had to estimate what's the initial temperature and what would be the temperatures you'd reach glacial maximum, and then temperature it would be at melting. Well, the average temperature of the ocean right now is 4 degrees centigrade. Even in the tropics, you get down there 1,000 meters and it's cold down there. It's really cold down in the bottom of the ocean. as you get down there near the bottom. So it's 4 degrees centigrade. So the ocean start off 30 degrees centigrade. That's about that's an estimate based on, there's a lot of ways to heat the water during the flood. But you can't heat it too much, or a lot of the fish and marine mammals we see today wouldn't be here. So I figure 30 degrees centigrade average is about as far as we can stretch it. So what temperature would the ice reach a maximum? Well, it occurred well below the temperatures of today. So about 10 degrees centigrade average ocean temperature. So that represents a drop of 20 degrees centigrade. So the way I calculated this, that was the change in temperature. I used what's called a budget equation, which you add up all the heating terms, subtract the cooling terms, you get a change in temperature, change in time. My change in temperature was 20 degrees centigrade, so I solved for change in time. It's like turning on the air conditioner in this room and the heater at the same time. And whichever one is more powerful, you'll get a certain change in temperature, change in time. Let's say in this case, which would be similar to the ocean, it's the air conditioner that's more powerful than the heater. So you get a gradual cooling in this room. And say we wanted to cool it off 20 degrees centigrade, you calculate, well, how long would that take based on the rates of the cooling and heating of the room? Well, that's the way you do it in the ocean, too. And so these are called budget equations. And I use these to estimate the time for the cooling of the oceans and the length of the ice age. But there's no way to be exact, accurate, so I had to estimate these things. So I used maximums and minimums for the variables that cooled and heated the oceans. I wanted to bracket the time. And so these are the ranges I got for the max and minimum times for the cooling of the oceans. The best estimate is about 500 years to cool the ocean down to 10 degrees centigrade for the ice to reach a maximum. Then it has to melt. But first of all, you have to think, kind of guesstimate. By the way, that's a technical weather term, guesstimate. The depth of the ice. And again, I use maximum and minimums for how much ice would occur on land. You can see my ranges for Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, which is mostly, or practically all, represented by Antarctica. The best estimate for the Northern Hemisphere is 2,330 feet. The best estimate for Antarctica is a little less than 4,000 feet. Then it melts. What I used was the energy balance over a snow and ice cover. And that's where you add up the heating terms, like solar radiation, subtract the cooling terms, like infrared radiation, and there's other terms, by the way. And you get a change in temperature, change in time. Once the temperature raises to 32 degrees, then you get net melting. So I used that equation. That's the most scientific way you can calculate melting, if you know all the variables. But we don't know those variables, especially during the ice age. So, again, I used maximum and minimums for the variables. One of the most difficult variables was the reflectivity of the snow, which changes rapidly with time. Fresh snow will reflect 90% of the sunlight that hits it, while old snow only about 40 or 50%, and 50 to 60% would be absorbed. So, based on this, I got ranges of 40 to 100 years for the edge of the ice sheet. For the edge, or the periphery. The best estimate is about 70 years. It melts about 10 meters a year, which is very sound when you compare it to the current melting rates in the melting zone of current glaciers like in Iceland, Alaska, and Norway. But interior Canada, interior Scandinavia, will melt slower because they get less solar radiation, their seasons are shorter, temperatures are cooler, so take around 200 years to melt ice in interior Canada and interior Scandinavia. So the total time for an ice age is 700 years. We don't need 100,000 years for an ice age. This is an example where we use biblical variables to solve a problem. We get totally different results. You don't need 100,000 years for one ice age. Then that brings up the question, was there more than one ice age? Well, I believe there were two ice ages. There was one before the flood in the vicinity of the Garden of Eden. And this is the Earth's first ice age right here. Hey, boy, are you acting so cold towards me? Did I do something wrong? You figure it out, Adam. Okay. So no one gets insulted by this cartoon. I found people give me feedback. I need to explain this a little bit. When man was first created, everything was perfect, very good. There was no sin or death in the world. All animals and man ate plants. And man and woman's relationship was perfect. Communication was perfect at that time. But because sin entered the world, things don't work out so well anymore, do they? In general, to be very general, women have sensitivity issues and men have clueless issues. And I'm one of those clueless males a lot of times. Anyway, let's move on and get serious here. Anyway, most areas that were glaciated show only one ice age in the glacial debris. One pile of glacial debris. It doesn't show multiple piles of glacial debris, except on the edges, as sometimes you find these complications. But there was a time when, based on Europe and the Midwest, they used to believe there were four ice ages. So everywhere they went, they saw four ice ages. It was a vast circular reasoning network where that they were trained to think that there's four ice ages. So they saw them, whether they're there or not. So in Alberta, they saw three or four or five ice ages in Alberta, south of Edmonton. But with new information, finding out that that was all, they were fooling themselves, deceiving themselves. Latest research from six researchers from the University of Alberta in Edmonton, they published this article in Geology in 1996, I think. Yeah, no, 1994. Oops, hit the wrong button. Anyway, notice the title of this. I'll translate some of the jargon. They believe in a single Lake Wisconsin Laurentide Glaciation, Edmonton area in southwest Alberta. The Laurentide Glaciation is the one that occurred over central and eastern Canada and the adjacent United States of the South. That's the Laurentide ice sheet or glaciation. The Lake Wisconsin is the last of their Pleistocene period. So they believe in just one single ice age late in their time scale for the Laurentide, Edmonton area, and southwest Alberta, just one. And notice what they say about multiple glaciations. They say glacial reconstructions commonly what? Assume multiple glaciation hypothesis in all areas that contain a till cover. What is till? Well, till is just jargon for glacial debris. That's all. So when they see glacial debris, they're looking for multiple ice ages. You know something that's very easy to see it if you're expecting it. That's hard to believe for scientists, isn't it? But if you know scientists, you know that it's not that hard to believe. But anyway, they assume multiple glaciations. And like I said, along the edges of the ice sheet, sometimes you will find complications. For instance, you'll see glacial debris, then a layer of sand, and then more glacial debris on top of that. And they used to automatically say, well, there's evidence of two glaciations right there. Oh, but the more we know about it, the more we know that one ice sheet or one glaciation can cause those features. Because at the edge of the ice sheet, it moves out, it melts back. Sometimes it surges forward. Sometimes you have lakes in front of it. So you have lots of complications. And you'd expect that at the edge of one ice sheet. And even in the interior of an ice sheet, a lot of times we have melting at the base. You know, there are dozens of lakes on the bottom of Antarctica. Liquid water. Well, you can have liquid water laying down sand between glacial debris right in the center of the ice sheets. So the more we know that these complications can be explained by one ice age. And that's what the evidence really says on the land out there. Will there be a future ice age? Well, what's the basis of this? Well, this is the basis of it. We are still in the glacial interglacial cycle. Interglaciers last about 10,000 years, and our current glaciation, interglacial is called the Holocene. The last ice age melted 10,000 years ago. In fact, they thought in the 1970s the next ice age was coming. How many of you remember between 1945 and 1975 we had glacial, we actually had global cooling, not global warming, for 30 years. And in the 1970s we had sea ice increasing, more snow remaining until late in the spring, and books were written about the next ice age coming, and Newsweek and Time jumped on about the ice age coming. How many of you remember that? Now we're kind of inundated with global warming. But that was a time when carbon dioxide was really shooting up, by the way. And we had global cooling for 30 years. See, that's why we have natural processes are more than half this global warming. But anyway, they thought that it was coming in the 1970s. In fact, in the New York Times, Daniel Grossman said this: if the past is any indication, the Earth is at the end of another such warm period, poised to descend into a new ice age. Now, you believe everything you read in the newspapers, don't you? You know, I see a few of you sweating, because, I mean, if the ice age would really start, you'd have 3,000 feet of ice over you in no time. Well, you can relax, because the Rainbow Promise is not only a promise that there'll never be a global flood, and the global flood caused the ice age, therefore the rainbow is a promise there'll never be another ice age. There will never be a future ice age. We don't have to worry about it anymore. I thought I saw a few beads of sweat on a few of your foreheads out there. So in summary, the ice age was a real event not that long ago. It is a major mystery for evolutionary Earth science. Noah's flood caused a transitional climate for an ice age. The ice age lasted only 700 years. We don't need 100,000 years for an ice age. There was only one ice age. So only the Bible ultimately explains the ice age because of the flood. That's why I have that provocative title. Only the Bible explains it because of the flood. Because of the flood. And there will be no future ice age. So concluding remarks, creationists have a viable mechanism for the last major event in Earth history. We can explain it. Well, they can. So why should we blame for all those older events? Like the dinosaurs dying off. There's thousands of stories of this evolving, this dying out, going extinct. This climate in the past, it was hot during the Cretaceous. I mean, all kinds of, if you read it in the literature, why should we believe any of it if they can't explain the last major event in Earth history? Some more concluding thoughts. The Ice Age is an example of what can do with those hundreds of other Earth science challenges, some of which I showed you at the beginning of the talk. We apply 1 Thessalonians 5:21. We gather the facts first. Watch out that we don't jump to conclusions too quick. This is a major problem in doing research, jumping to conclusions too quick. Gather the facts first. And when I do this, a lot of times I see an explanation within the biblical worldview. And these are areas that they can't explain. I've done a lot of research in this area. That's why I have over 200 publications in the creationist technical literature. Also, I want to say something about time. Include time. If you add up all those genealogies in Genesis, you go back around 6,000 or years using the Usher chronology. There's some controversy over this within creationism. I'm not into chronology, so I'm just going to take it right at the Usher chronology. And some people are embarrassed about this, but I'm finding that this short time scale is key to solving major mysteries of Earth science that they can't explain and have been around for over 100 years or 150 years. How so? Well, for instance, volcanism. They know, based on historical volcanoes in the last 300 years, that big volcanoes cool the globe off for 1 to 3 years, anywhere from 0.2 degrees to 1 degree centigrade. Global cooling from volcanoes. Well, they know there's a lot of volcanoes that went off during the Ice Age. But they stretched the Ice Age into hundreds of thousands of years. Their Ice Age period is a total of 2.5 million years. So when it's stretched out like that, it becomes insignificant. Volcanism's insignificant in a time scale like that. But what if you telescope all that to within a few hundred years? It becomes a very powerful mechanism to cool the Earth. So that's the key, one of the keys. And the warm ocean from the flood. So time is on our side. The short time scale is on our side. And this is just one example I have discovered. More concluding thoughts. The Ice Age is based on the flood. Therefore, the flood, and the flood is a real event. It's actually evidence for the flood. Therefore, the flood, one of the most despised events in the culture, is a real event in history. We can trust that there was a flood. And if we can trust the flood, it is easy to believe the whole Bible. We can trust the whole Bible, not only the history, but the spiritual aspects, which, of course, tells us how to get to heaven and how to live here with each other on earth. Well, I've been doing this for 40 years, and as a result, I've written a lot. So I'm going to tell you about most of those resources, or half of them. My main publication now at this moment is Frozen in Time. This has lots of bonus features for you. By the way, there's a lot of subsidiary mysteries besides what I just told you. I'm just telling you about the mechanism of the Ice Age. There's what happened to woolly mammoths. That's another major mystery. Also, the lowlands of Siberia, Alaska, not glaciated, etc. Anyway, this goes through the Ice Age and mammoths. Easy-to-read book. And if you want to know about those ancient ice ages, hundreds of millions to several billion years ago, I've written a monograph on that topic showing that they're due to gigantic landslides during the flood. During the flood. Also, we wanted to, my wife and I, who's back in the back, wanted to teach the concepts of the ice age. And not only that, but how does cavemen fit into all this? I mean, they were men that lived in caves during the Ice Age. We lived in caves too during the Ice Age. And Neanderthal man, a variety of man lived there too. And so they interacted in a friendly way. Anyway, it's a storybook and teaching about the Ice Age. So Life in the Great Ice Age. And we have a follow-up book that focuses on the mystery of the woolly mammoth, uncovering the mysterious woolly mammoth. These are books for young people and adults. And if you want to know more about the weather, my specialty, I've written one of the Wonders of Creation series, the weather book. And ice cores. How many know about the challenge of ice cores? So-called hundred thousand annual layers they claim they can count in the Greenland ice sheet. By down the ice core. 100,000 annual layers, or actually 110,000 near the bottom, by counting the rings in a tree to date the bottom of the ice core. What? That seems like a pretty powerful challenge. Well, anyway, I wrote a whole monograph on it, or in-depth study on it. There's a lot more to it. If you believe it's old, you're going to get old age out of it. That's to simplify it. But if you believe it's young, mostly built up during the Ice Age, and a little building after the Ice Age, it's young. So it's almost that simple, not quite. But anyway, if you're interested in that. And if you want to know more about the Lake Missoula flood that affected especially Washington State, I've written a book about that. Since I'm from Washington State, I just couldn't help but to study these things for years and end up writing a story or a book on it. I focus mainly on the controversy where the Lake Missoula flood has hundreds of pieces of evidence out there in eastern Washington, northern Oregon, that there's this monstrous flood there, like Grand Coulee, Dry Falls, so forth. But they rejected the idea of a monstrous flood out there because it was too biblical. That's why. For 40 years they rejected it, and they never hardly went out there to look either. But they accepted it starting in the 1960s. It's quite a story. One guy stood alone for 40 years. Anyway, it also has features that are similar to what happened during the Genesis flood. Anyway, that's all for the advertisements. I want to leave you just with a few websites where you get a lot more information. My website's the second one down there. I have two long e-books on that. On what's called geomorphology, evidence for the runoff of the floodwaters off the land, and where is the flood post flood boundary? If you're so inclined to read these books, they're rather in depth and they're long and detailed. But hopefully wrote them for laymen. I want to emphasize the creation.com website there. There's over 8,000 articles on that website you can download free or read free on practically any subject in this for all levels of scientific ability. Children's articles, there's lots of in-depth articles, and also the Answers in Genesis site there. If you're interested in tours of the Western U.S., I don't think they come up from British Columbia, but this group, creationencounters.com, is tours you can, like if you want to look at the Channel Scablands in eastern Washington, you could check the website. Anyway, thanks for listening on this hot day, and I hope I cooled you off some. Thank you.